favorite wing. I always say the next one.
Float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line.
Yes, indeed. Hello and welcome to NFL Only Better, your look ahead to all the NFL action every Wednesday, right direct into your ears, John. Myself and yourself and Mike sit down, look at everything, make a few selections. Me and Mike get them right and you get them wrong.
That's kind of how it's tended to go so far. But, you know, we like to keep things balanced here on the podcast.
It's a balanced show. Yeah, it's a balanced tipping show where two people are good at tipping and one person.
I'll get something right eventually.
Yeah. And that's actually being mean because you have got a lot of things right over the last couple of weeks. But I do like to just, you know, when you do get one wrong. And let's talk about a couple of things we got wrong. I can hear Mike laughing already. Mike Carson, of course, is joining us on the line. I should introduce you guys. That's very rude. Mike Carson, of course, is joining us on the line. Betting.bet for contributor and NFL expert. And John Baff is here beside me as well here in our Dublin studio. Mike, we got a few things right over the weekend. I'm just going to say for me, I got San Francisco at 6-4. I said they would beat the Rams. They did beat the Rams. But there was a couple of tough ones. And I do have to start with your column. You know what I'm going to say. But unders in the New Orleans game was tipped up. I think it was 3-3 at one stage.
Yeah, I actually went with the over on that one in my Friday column on Betfair. And so I do tend to hedge my bets on the podcast a little bit because I get that extra day or
so. So you're always right, no matter what happens.
I considered doing that, picking one way on the podcast and another way in my column, and that way I would always be right. But I actually was on the over on that one as a value bet, and I think it was 44, and a 13-6 game does not give you very much on the overs. And I think that's interesting because it does prove that New Orleans has a good defense, a defense to reckon with. And that's what's kept them in games. Not that Teddy Bridgewater isn't an effective quarterback, because he's also proving that he's getting back to the form that he had before that horrible injury in Minnesota. But that defense is going to keep New Orleans in a lot of games. My good pick was I was all over Arizona, both straight up with the points and the over-under on that, which was 51. I think in the podcast I said that that's high, but I took it. And obviously it was a 67-point game, which I only won straight up because Matt Bryant missed a field goal. So when I complain crazy about game. Bad beats, you never hear anybody complaining about bad wins, you know. I got Seattle the other week when Zuerlein missed a 44-yard field goal, which is usually automatic for him. So, but my other bet, the outside bet, was to go on the first half over for Green Bay Detroit, which was 23-5, and apparently it went down to 23 just before game time, and the first half was 23 points.
Yeah, right on the
so
nail.
I mean, that was a bad bet, even if you don't start getting into the whole refereeing morass in that game, which was absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, well, we will speak about that in a couple of moments, but before we get to that, just a couple of little things that really would have hurt people who got involved with the lines over the weekend, and not the Detroit Lions, the lines of the games, of course. First off, Kansas, 17-3 up. They were 3.5 points, around about four nearly by the start of play, even 4.5, I note, I think right before kickoff. And you would have looked pretty sweet on that. But again, Kansas, I mean, they are one that we really need to talk about because they are now 30th in the league in runs. I can't believe there's two teams actually worse than them in the league at run defense. And Houston ran 36 more offensive plays. So, Mike, you can't really say that Houston didn't deserve to win, but it's a worrying fortnight for Kansas.
Oh, it's a terrible one because they're playing coming off two bad games for them, and they're playing on Thursday. One of the big problems is that their offensive line's a mess, and their best lineman, Eric Fisher's out, injured. And of course, when you play on Thursday, you don't get as much time to bring a guy back, and if it's questionable, you tend not to, because he's going to get an extra 10 days to heal after your Thursday night game. So that works against you. And Patrick Mahomes, obviously, has an ankle injury, which got aggravated during that Houston game, and teams are going to come at him now, you know, looking to hit him as often as possible and try to keep that ankle. Because if he loses mobility, in front of a bad offensive line, it really hurts them. But I think you got onto the key thing right away, and it's the run game. And in Kansas City's case, it's not that they can't run the ball, it's that they don't run the ball. LeSean McCoy had 8 carries for 44 yards, but there were only 3 other carries the whole game by running back. I think they had 12 the week before. And Kansas City's defense is awful.
Yeah.
We know this. Okay, so if you have an awful defense, what do you need to do? What's the best way to help an awful defense is to keep the other team's offense off the damn field. And you can't do that if you're going 3 and out on downs because you're passing all the time and you're stopping the clock with every incompletion. So Andy Reid the pattern tends to be he'll give the running back a few carries in the first quarter. And then as soon as the other team sort of puts points on the board, he thinks he's in a shootout and they go to the pass. So, you know, yes, the offensive line's a problem, but here's another half fact. Run blocking is easier than pass blocking for most linemen because you're coming at the defender. You get a little advantage. You know where you want him to go. You're not sitting back and letting him be the aggressor. So I think Andy Reid needs to just get back into the running game, plain and simple, to give them a chance. And, you know, now they're playing Denver on Thursday. Denver had 7 sacks last week against Tennessee. They had a bunch against the Chargers the week before. Now, those two teams both have line problems like Kansas City does and don't have a quarterback as good as Mahomes is. But what does this say to you? You know, you've got to negate the pass rush by running at them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Another stat that stuck out to me, Mike, was the fact that this is the second week in a row in which Kansas have given up double-digit penalties. And as you would well know, that if you're not giving your offense a platform, if you're just losing yards every time you have the ball, or if you're gifting yards to the opposition by ill discipline, it's very, very difficult to get a foothold in a game.
John, you said
that's a great point, and you know it's really interesting that they're playing with such indiscipline, which is often a sign of a team. It's like you're a drowning man waving in the ocean. You know, you're taking liberties with the rules to try to succeed. Mm-hmm. Now the penalty count may go down a little with Marcus. It may go down a little, you know, if they sit back a bit on defense. Yeah. And, you know, but I think they don't have enough talent not to be aggressive.
Well, John, you said, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, that they go out knowing the teams are going to score, you know, 20, 30 points between them. And they're happy enough with that they can then come and beat that. But right now, they don't look like they're going to do that. Well, actually, you know, we don't normally touch on the Thursday night game too much because, well, you know, the show is kind of aimed towards the Sunday matches.
Yeah.
But we have spoken detail there about Kansas, so I suppose we should just really look at the betting for that game, which is Kansas City at the Denver Broncos. And, John, I know you asked me just a little bit. I think just before we come on air, the word you said is it 3? Is it really 3, the spread, is what you said to me? So you obviously have something that you think about this game.
Well, I mean, maybe we're sort of piling on the Chiefs now after all this, but I'd like the Broncos to win that game. I think they can pull it off by 3 points. I think that's an interesting game, given the liabilities that we've just discussed with the Chiefs, and the Broncos seem to be ticking. They didn't concede a point last weekend. I think this is a good bet.
Mm.
Yeah, and the Broncos are getting the 3. I think we should.
Yes,
that's what
I mean, exactly. Yes.
Which is in Denver. I mean, Denver's a great home field advantage. Denver and Kansas City, two of the biggest in the league. But the thing in Denver is teams do tend to run out of gas.
The altitude, isn't
quarter.
It?
Now,
yeah.
The thing with Denver is that as good as they have played the last couple of weeks, they haven't laid big points on either the Chargers or Tennessee, who are both offensively challenged teams. So you've got to think that Kansas City will be able to score more points on Denver. And I'm not sure Denver, even against a defense like Kansas City's, is going to be able to put up more than about 20, 21 on them. So I'm not quite convinced. I think that 3 points does make a big difference for the Broncos. Sure. And you know, if you're a Chiefs fan, or if you're a bit hesitant on this, you think, well, the Chiefs are due for an offensive breakout now. But, you know, they had it in the first half last week.
Yeah, your bet looks safe. Your bet looks safe.
It depends a lot as well. We touched on we spoke about it this week. We spoke about it last week. But Mahomes' mobility is such a vital part of that offense. And if you can even take away 10% of that, I think you give the other team a good chance.
Absolutely. Well, that is the Thursday night game. Listen, before we move on to talk about the other things, there's so much to talk about. We could talk about Lamar Jackson now being better than Baker Mayfield. We could talk about the Rams, the Chiefs, and Dallas, of course, all stuttering. Mike, you touched on the Packers-Lions refereeing, which we might touch on a little bit when we look at the Packers game. But very, very quickly for the two of you, he's a guy that we bring up a lot is Jameis Winston. You kind of either love him or hate him. He's in the fifth and final year of his rookie contract. He's thrown most interceptions in that time of any quarterback, and he had his worst game on Sunday in London at the Spurs Stadium. And he's costing them games now, if you ask me.
What's the main, or one of the principal attributes you look for in a quarterback? And that's
handsomeness. We've discussed it many times. I literally talk about it every week.
Aside from the handsomeness.
That's my theory as to why Green Bay are getting the breaks from the referee.
Yeah, Rodgers just winks.
We should point out, though, the 49ers are still unbeaten on that. And that is handsome why. Quarterback stake. But anyway.
No defense can take that. Those eyes.
Aside from a striking jawline, one of the other attributes that's very important for a quarterback, I think, is just stability, the ability to be a dependable asset for the team, kind of like clockwork. You know what you're going to get, you know how the offense is going to run, you know what's going to work and what's not going to work. And you just do not get that from Jameis Winston, in my opinion. I took a little cheap shot at him last week, and I said, hopefully, in what was last weekend's games, I was like, maybe he can learn to throw to his own team for once, and that'd be nice. And he certainly, I don't think he did that particularly well or particularly admirably in London. But for that very reason, I think that makes the Buccaneers just such a difficult team to gauge accurately, because you do not really know. Because he does have some fantastic games still. We're going back a while now, but he was Rookie of the Year. He's had a 28 touchdown season, but he's the liabilities there are just becoming too much, I think.
I was doing that game, you know, on Talk Sport Radio, so I had a great view of it, because the booth there is in a fantastic position at Spurs. And Jameis made a couple of really good throws, which he's always going to do. He can put the ball a long distance and put it right on the money. But he also made a couple of really bad throws, and he showed a rookie level of mistake making, which was just insane, of holding the ball too long, of spinning in the pocket into sacks, not away from sacks, of having the ball. He fumbled twice, but you know, only lost one of them. He threw five interceptions. His first interception and his last interception were similar in that he stared down his receiver both times, and the nearest defender didn't come up and cover the receiver. He just stood there, let him throw the ball, and then stepped in front of the receiver for the interception. It couldn't have been more easy. It's also interesting that Mariota in Tennessee and Jameis, who were the 1-2 picks, and the big debate was, you know, who should go one, who should go two, are both basically busts at this point. And Tennessee, I think Tannehill now is starting for them. I think Mariota's probably gone at the end of the season. Arians says that he wants to keep Jameis. Both their contracts are up. Neither was signed. You know, neither had their contracts extended, their rookie contracts. Arians says he wants to keep Jameis because Jameis has all the qualities that he values in a quarterback, which is the ability to go to throw deep. But when you saw Carolina's defense, which is a good one, and they're basically aimed at keeping everything in front of them defensively, and they were confusing him. He couldn't find an open receiver. He couldn't get to other reads without being obvious. And these are rookie level mistakes. He's in his fifth year in the NFL, and he shouldn't be making them. Now, they don't have anyone else to go to particularly, so that'll keep Bruce Arians working with him. But if Arians can't do anything with him, I don't see who else is going to be able to.
And if you look at the bell curve of this as well, you'd expect to see some sort of progression. You can give a rookie quarterback a bit of breathing room, particularly in a first year, even a second year rookie or quarterback as well. But if he's now in his fifth year and he's trending up in sort of mistakes and interceptions thrown, I think that's a worrying sign.
And the thing about Mike touched on it, and it was what I was going to mention there, was if you watch his games, it's actually the same mistakes. It's holding on to the ball, it's the spin, and even the interceptions are It's like I'm throwing it to John. He's on the left, so I take the snap. I'm looking left.
In the NFL,
like you're going to get caught out. You have to trick them with your eyes. I mean, he's basically shouting at him before he throws the ball. John,
Exactly.
I made that point during the game. I said one of the things that the great quarterbacks do, your Rodgers and Russell Wilson, Brady, mm-hmm. Peyton Manning, is they get a receiver open by using their eyes. They take a safety away from the coverage by looking one way until the last minute and then come back and throw. And the other big difference, of course, is that those guys I've just named will throw the ball to a receiver before he's made his break in running his pattern because they're depending on him to be where he's supposed to be. And Jameis can't anticipate like that. He waits till he sees the receiver open and then throws. And if you're watching the receiver the whole time until he gets open, until you think he's open, all you're doing is inviting somebody else to jump into the coverage.
Okay, we'll touch on a little bit more of the news, but we've already covered the Thursday night game, so let's head towards Sunday night's action. I believe Sky ran a poll for what the 6 o'clock game would be, and it's no surprise to see someone like the Packers winning it. I think they ran a poll for both games, actually.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Did
you vote, Kieran?
I did, but I can't remember which game I voted for, if I'm being totally honest.
Let's just say
spot.
it was Packers game.
I think it might have been Packers, yeah. I think. Anyway, I'll see if I can find it, if they send me something that said what I voted for.
Do you often forget who you vote for?
It's not a politics show, John. Oakland Raiders are big 2-1. I mean, Oakland Raiders are coming off a 10-day or a bye week, shall I say, 2-week bye, excuse me. Before we literally talk about the spreads and everything, it's a 5.5 handicap at the moment. The total points is 46. You mentioned it, Mike, that, I mean, Green Bay got some calls their way on the game the other night. And for those people who I suppose maybe didn't see it, or for a lot of people who join us and listen to the podcast who wouldn't be, I mean, obviously they know the rules of NFL and they it's not like they need to be told, oh, you get 4 plays to get 10 yards and that's how it all works. Some of the calls, if you can explain just how bad they were for referees and for something that is so well watched with cameras to still have the really terrible calls by the referees in this match is shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, and there were a bunch of them throughout the game to the point where, you know, where the commentators are starting to, well, I don't see that, you know. The basic problem, and I thought in some ways the most egregious call of the whole match was a pass interference that went uncalled. On Marvin Jones when Will Redmond was draped all over him and Matt Patricia didn't challenge it, which is something you can do, but people aren't winning those challenges. And there's an interesting column by Mike Tenier today saying that what the NFL has done is to put in this challenge rule on interference as a knee-jerk reaction to Nickell Robey-Coleman's uncalled interference in the NFC Championship game last year for the Rams against the Saints, and Sean Payton's on the quote-unquote competition committee that decides these things. But what that's in there for is window dressing, and they're not going to overturn them unless, as the interpretation for the rule goes for the referees, it has to be gaining a significant advantage. So unless you are Nickell Robey-Coleman knocking a guy before the ball gets there, head to helmet to helmet, you're not going to get the call, even if it's pretty obvious interference. And I think that is what people are most complaining about. But in this game, and you can't take blame away from the Lions, who left a lot of points on the field that this should have been up on the board, settling for field goals. They couldn't make plays when they needed to make them. They had a stupid 12 men on the field penalty when Green Bay was going to kick a field goal, which basically gave them a touchdown because it gave them first and goal. But beyond that, in the last quarter, all of a sudden, Trey Flowers, who was just destroying Green Bay's offensive line, they'd gotten 3 or 4 holding calls in the first half, twice got called for illegal hands to the face while he was pass rushing. Yeah. And both times I was yelling because I had seen Green Bay blockers go with hands to the face and be holding. And I thought when the flags came, that's what it was going to be. And on both replays, you saw Flowers quite clearly get his hands on the shoulder pads of the offensive lineman.
Yeah, it seemed completely legit.
Push him backwards, nowhere near the face mask. So, you know, the question is, what was the umpire seeing? Yeah. I don't know. That's maybe it was Aaron Rodgers' smile, and maybe they want, you know, maybe they want Rodgers and Drew Brees in the NFC Championship, you know, so they can get two nice, marketable guys that they have trust in. But, you know, I just saw all through the game the calls were bad, and I joked already today, but a couple of years ago, Matt Patricia, when he was still with the Patriots, was after they won the Super Bowl in Atlanta, was in his office, and it went out on social media, picture of him with a T-shirt that had Roger Goodell on the T-shirt with a red nose on his face. And I'm thinking, Matt Patricia may never win another challenge in the NFL as long as Roger remembers that photograph.
What I thought was interesting, Mike, about the Trey Flowers and Bakhtiari incident was those he got called twice in that game, as you said, for the same penalty, neither of which to me on replay, like you also said, seemed to be an appropriate penalty. But he had never in Flowers' entire career, he's never been called for an hands to the face penalty, and he gets two in very short notice questionable decisions against him in that particular game. And Kieran and I were talking just on the way in here, actually.
No, we weren't.
I sat in the back in silence in Kieran's limo. But does this, I mean, it might sound slightly knee-jerk or something like this, but is there time now to have sort of a wider debate about the standard of officiating within the NFL?
I think it's quite possible, but it's interesting, you know, Sean Hockley is the referee, whose father was Ed Hockley, who was a referee for years and years in the NFL. And there's, you know, the NFL, not just in officiating, but in ownership and in coaching, and is a highly nepotistic business. It's like a medieval guild in some ways. And to me, that's more, the problem is more that it's medieval in the sense of rules than it is in the people enforcing them. The way that, for example, pass interference, but also holding, hands to the face is an incompetency issue. Mm. I mean, a hand is in the face or it's not.
Exactly.
That's pretty obvious. Most of the others are judgment calls, and they've been made worse by the way that the interpretation goes. So where the pass interference rule says you can't touch a player when the ball's in the air, the interpretation is you can't gain a significant advantage by touching him. Well, once you allow the hands in there, how do you tell that's a significant advantage or not? In that game, Kerryon Johnson fumbled the ball and it got called an incomplete pass. Mm. Okay. He caught the ball against his shoulder pads with both hands on it. With both hands on it, he moved it down his body. Then he shifted the ball because he saw a tackler coming from his left. He shifted the ball to his right hand. All the time he's doing this, he's running. So he takes three steps while this process goes on. Then he gets hit and he fumbles the ball out of bounds. Now, to me, and to most people, I think, that looked like a fumble.
Yep, I told it.
He was a runner. Yeah, he was no longer fumble. A receiver. He was a runner, and he fumbled the ball.
Yeah.
You think of Juju Smith-Schuster, the fumble that cost Pittsburgh the game a couple of weeks ago. It was virtually the same situation, although in Juju's case, the knocked it out. But otherwise, it was the same thing. Had he converted from a receiver to a runner, in which case the normal fumble rules apply. And now they, you know, it was challenged and they reversed the call, which just amazed me, to an incomplete pass. And I know they would rather have incomplete passes than fumbles, because then you don't get a change of possession and you don't have to worry about it. But the inconsistency is just frightening in this. You know, it's almost random.
Yeah.
And you think now that they don't want to overturn. And Al Riveron in New York, who makes these decisions, doesn't want to overturn his referees. So when they overturn it, you just think, well, it has to be really clear that the guy wasn't a runner. You know, and how do you tell that he had possession but not control of the ball when he hands while he's running? How can that not be control?
Yeah,
yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think
maybe we should ask him.
it's one of the built-in blind spots to not just this sport but several sports, is that once you give too much leeway to personal interpretation, you just open up a whole can of worms with regards to problems.
Yeah, overall. And you know what happens? They don't want, you know, if you say, okay, we're going to interpret the pass interference rule, and when the ball's in the air, you can't touch the receiver. They don't want that, because that means, you know, so many guys now have their hands on the receiver and never play the ball, never even know where the ball is. When the receiver's arms go up for the ball, they stick theirs between it. You know, when they see his eyes go up, they put their hand in front of his helmet to try to block his vision. You can't do that unless you can have a hand on the guy.
Yeah, but Mike, we'll move on from this, but very quickly, don't you think a little bit of that comes also from, if you watch college football on a Saturday, it's almost like a different game sometimes. I mean, there's far less flags, and you're allowed to do a lot more. And especially as a defensive player, I mean, you don't have to turn your ball head back to the ball if you're trying to tackle a wide receiver. There are things in the college game that make it a faster, almost better to watch sometimes.
That's true, and there's also worse refereeing in college game when they do, and I think that's part of it. Is that because they make fewer calls? When they do make them, they're often bad. Mm. The Pac-12 is the worst. if you're watching like Washington State against Oregon or something like that, forget it. You know, it's like you might as well bring three basketball referees in.
It's a crapshoot.
Yeah. So let's talk about this game then, because Green Bay are coming in now on a bit of form. They're a bit of an up and down team. We've mentioned how tough they can be to call, and they're two inconsistent sides really. The Oakland Raiders and the Green Bay Packers. But the Packers do look like a team. They're at top of their conference now. They've had some good victories. They went to Dallas and they won as well not so long ago. At the time, it looked like a great victory. But I don't really want to talk about Dallas. You may have seen in the cliff notes for this show that I called them something.
Yeah, you weren't happy with that Jets game.
They let me down for some money in a nice little accumulator I had with some other teams. So we're not going to talk about Dallas this week. It's a Dallas-less week because of it. I got to say straight off, I like the Packers in this. Mike, what do you think?
The question to me, I will pick the Packers, I think, straight up. Although, you know, I want to say John Gruden in the last two games game planned really well both times, and his team executed their game plans, and they won those games through coaching. And I have been very critical of Gruden many times in the past, and you have to give him credit for that. And they've done it on the road as well, because even though it was a home game for them in London, that's a road game, basically. Now, whether the Packers are, I think they're a touchdown better, basically. If Davante Adams plays, I would have far less worry about it, because it's almost as if, I think there was a story that that Aaron Rodgers, you know, actually asked them to put a receiver in the game who they weren't going to play, and then immediately Lazard became his favorite target. You know, this kind of undrafted guy, no one had heard of. And if Davante Adams is back, that will help a bit. But I think at 5.5, I'd probably stick with the Packers.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the Packers as well. John, what do you think about this one?
I kind of entirely agree with Mike there. If you read my notes here, I had written, just keep an eye on whether Davante Adams is playing. If he's deemed fit, I'd be very, very confident that the Packers win there. Which probably means the Raiders are going to take it.
And we never actually mentioned at the start of the program. We mentioned what you said, but it
can
was.
Can I just back both teams from now on?
When we did the best bet section, you said Washington, which is,
you know what? Well, you should take a poll of the people listening and see how many of them listen and then go exactly the opposite way of what we said.
That's what we had. Yeah. Well, I said my two bets of the weekend. I'm not trying to brag or anything, but I said San Francisco at 6-4 was a cracking bet, and my best bet was Patriots on the handicap, and it was handicap was 17. They won by 20 plus.
Well, I predicted, like you alluded to there, Kieran, I did say that the Redskins would beat the Dolphins. I got the spread incorrect.
Yeah, but that's the main thing.
So I can successfully say that I predicted the Dolphins would lose a game.
Okay, so we're all going for the Packers there, and probably the cover pretty handily.
I'd be happy with that.
But let's move on, because the 9:25 contest is going to be cracking, I think. The Seahawks, right? The Seahawks, season by season, you can always tell how strong they're going to be. And this year, they look really, really strong to me. Yeah. They look like a really, really solid outfit. But the Ravens are also a good team as well. So, Mike, this could be a really, really tasty matchup on Sunday evening, couldn't it?
Yeah, and one that will feature an awful lot of good line play, I think. It's interesting that the Ravens picked up Marcus Peters from the Rams yesterday. Yeah. Because it says to me that Jimmy Smith, their cornerback, probably isn't coming back anytime soon, and they want reinforcement in the secondary. Both these teams want to run the ball. I think the difference is that Russell Wilson offers a sort of more varied passing attack than Lamar Jackson does. Wilson's got that deep ball ability. And the odd thing here is, I'm looking at our Betfair odd sheet right now, is that it's a 3.5-point margin. And because of that half point, the Seahawks are actually 11-10, which to me seems like a pretty good value bet.
Yeah, I'd agree. John, remind me again, who did Seattle beat at the weekend?
They beat the Browns by four points.
That's right. Yeah, sorry. They were in the accumulator that Dallas let down. I'm not going to keep going on about it.
I won't. I'll stop talking about bad officiating as well.
But they played quite well in that, and we all have probably heard the story now that Russell Wilson's communications thing failed when he scored one of the crucial touchdowns game.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It stopped working in the second down, I think.
Yeah. What did he do? Just make up his own play?
He just basically made up his own play. Okay. Yeah. Which is a very Russell Wilson thing to do.
Well, whatever he's doing this season seems to be working. I mean, he's certainly got to be, at this stage of the season, nearing the halfway point, he's got to be in contention for the MVP to this point.
I think you'll agree that he's not doing anything he doesn't do every year, because I think two seasons ago, he was like 80% of the offensive plays were either like he threw the ball or he ran it in.
He was ridiculous.
What he is.
I think the difference this year is that their offensive line, in a sort of second year of being more or less solid with the same guys, although Fant has been out, but and they've been better coached by Mike Solari than they were by Tom Cable, they actually have a running game that can take a little bit of the pressure off him and eat up some of the clock. Carson has been very good apart from fumbles. And DK Metcalf has created a bit of a threat in the secondary who has to be accounted for, which means Lockett gets more single coverage. And Lockett has turned into a really good receiver. He's made some spectacular catches. And that's another facet of the run game that goes, I think this year running has been really important to teams as an antidote to high-powered offenses. And Baltimore, of course, is a run-first team as well. They had Lamar Jackson had 150 yards last week, and I think Ingram and Gus Edwards added another 80 or so. So, I mean, that's a lot of run yardage. But in the Houston game, Houston ran the ball with Watson running, but Duke Johnson and Carlos Hyde, they had over 200 yards rushing, or about 200 yards rushing. And I just think if you can control the game that way, And people have been saying you can't, that the run game no longer controls. But I think you keep the other team's offense off the field, and that becomes a hugely important thing. If you look at San Francisco against the Rams in Los Angeles last week, they ran the ball 35 times. They only had 94 yards. So you would say, oh, the rushing game is completely ineffective for them. That's less than 3 yards a carry. But they held the ball for 39 minutes in that game. And against the Rams, that's valuable in itself. Sure, they only completed 8 passes to their wideouts and another 8 to Kittle. But if you can make the Rams play 3 and outs, you can beat them. The best way to beat that offense is to keep it off the field. Yeah. And this doesn't apply to Seattle and Baltimore, because they're both going to try to run the ball and do the same thing. But I think the difference in the two teams is Russell Wilson is a better all-around quarterback than Lamar Jackson.
John, how do you see this one going? Are you following in with us all and saying Seahawks?
I am. I think it should be a close encounter, as Mike was saying. I do think Wilson, unless he threw one last weekend that I've forgotten about, he hasn't thrown a pick all season. which is astonishing, 6 or 7 games in at this stage. Ravens have looked impressive, despite the fact that they lost to the much maligned Browns, Kieran, the team you seem to have a vendetta against.
And not a vendetta, just not great.
I think this is one of the games that home field advantage is kind of one of the telling things that'll tip it in their favor.
I'm just a bit worried that we're all going for it, so screw it, I'm going to go with Baltimore. Baltimore Ravens for me.
Yep.
So we'll see how we get on that. I did say that it would be a Dallas Cowboys-less show. Unfortunately, they are Sunday Night Football, so I'm not just going to say anything about it except they are an awful team that will let you down. You should never ever put them in your accumulator. And Jason Garrett
what's interesting is
lucky
that
to be still alive.
I was reading an article yesterday, and Jerry Jones was not in so many words, but he was kind of agreeing with you. He says we're not a good team.
Well, Mike, I genuinely don't know how Garrett still has the job. Nobody wants to call for someone to be fired, but in the NFL, I mean, like, people get fired all the time. That's what happens, right? I mean, Tony Romo was doing the game the other night, and Romo, like, you can tell that he's not sold on Jason Garrett. It's
hard to tell. It's hard to figure what it is he actually does, because at the beginning of the season, when they were beating up on bad teams, everybody said, oh, Kellen Moore, new offensive coordinator, look at how good the offense looks. Most of that, I think, is down to having the line functioning, and both their starting tackles are out right now. So that will explain a lot of the malfunctions on the offense. But you have to scheme for that. The other thing head coaches do, if they're not tactical geniuses, is they're emotional leaders. Mm. And they get more out of the team than the team deserves to have. And you don't see much of that from Garrett. You know, he mostly seems to be standing on the sideline. Now, Mike Lombardi calls him the Clapper, which is a great nickname.
There is a bit of that.
Because he's basically, something good happens, something bad happens. You know, he's like the cheerleaders. if he had pom-poms, he'd be shaking the pom-poms, but instead he claps. So my theory is that Jerry Jones doesn't hire a new coach partly because nobody wants to work for him, and partly because he can blame Garrett, not himself. And he runs the team. He and his son run the team.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point.
And they decide the personnel decisions and that kind of stuff. He's in a perfect spot right now where his head coach doesn't challenge him, and where he can blame the head coach subtly, but still obviously, for the team's shortcomings.
And speaking of those personal decisions or the personnel decisions, this is a contract year, Kieran, for Dak Prescott, and he's been kind of open about how much he wants to get paid. Do you pay Dak Prescott? Do you give him a new contract?
Yeah, I probably would. I would. I don't think the problems that are there are necessarily something to do with Prescott. I think if you see when he's on form and Zeke is on form and Amari Cooper on form, he can gun it and he can run a team. I think they've got other problems. Dallas, I think defensively they're very, very weak. And I don't think their offensive line can be good as well sometimes. And I think they're poorly coached. That's what I was asking you two experts about. But I think they're poorly coached. I think decision-making, there was some crazy decisions made on Sunday where field goals were taken, where they went on it on 4th-and-1 when a field goal would have got them back within a score.
That was crazy.
Mm. Yeah, like those decisions. Like, I know the stats and analysis now come into it, and going for it on 4th down is more popular now. And in fact, I love it. It's great. It's what makes it enjoyable to watch.
Sure.
But if you I'm trying to think what the score was at the time. I think it might have been 14-6.
It was a 2-score game.
Yes,
and they needed the field goal would have helped them. And part of it though is also your play selection. You don't want to be prisoner of outcome bias where you criticize a decision because it didn't work. But that one was one where the decision was a bad one and the play call was atrocious. And it was being defensed. It wasn't like they fooled anybody. If you watch the replay, one of the defensive linemen literally drops back at the snap like a free safety. And you got it.
They're ready for it.
It was like maybe they should play in the free safety instead of defensive tackle. You know,
we're giving the Eagles 3 points. Dallas are at home. I'm not going near Dallas. We saw them against Green Bay at home. A good side came in and rolled them over pretty easily, if you ask me. They went on the road to Jets. I know the Jets are a completely different kettle of fish when Sam Darnold is at quarterback, because he's a very good quarterback. But again, they hadn't won a game.
Yeah.
And they made Dallas look like a very poor team at times. And the game was pretty much over at halftime.
There's a few teams looking like, I just saw, just sorry to cut across you there, Kieran, but I saw an interesting stat on Twitter. And not so long ago, remember the Chiefs were 4-0, the Rams and the Cowboys were both 3-0, but collectively they've gone 0-8 since they registered those records. So it's a it's a topsy-turvy world here in the NFL.
That's a good one. I mean, the only hesitation I have here is Philadelphia went to Minnesota last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, what did the Vikings, who had not been that impressive, do? They ran Cook and they ran Madison 30 times between the two of them, and controlled the game. And that let Cousins hit Diggs for a couple of long touchdowns because they were running the ball. And Dallas is capable of doing that same thing. Tougher with those two tackles missing from their offensive line. But Minnesota's offensive line isn't particularly good. And Philadelphia's secondary has a couple of injuries in it and is pretty awful. This to me is a really difficult game to pick.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you mentioned something there, and I'm about being poorly coached. Dallas liked to run the ball, but they were well in a hole in the third quarter, and they ran the ball. Now they did get a touchdown out of it, but it was almost a 7-minute drive. And when you're relying on a run game to get you out of a hole when you're 3 scores down, you don't need a 7-minute drive.
Particularly like we discussed, if you can't rely on the onside kick to get you the ball back.
That's
why
Minnesota, to me, Minnesota's a simple team to play. You know, if you can stop Cook and Madison, who's turning, you know, rookie running back who's looking pretty good. But if you can stop the run game and then get some points to make them play catch up, they're extremely vulnerable. They have to play in the lead. And that's the only way Kirk Cousins is going to be any good. Dallas is kind of like that as well. Dak is good, but he's not Russell Wilson, who's, I think, the obvious comparison. He's not the athlete that Russell Wilson is.
Go ahead. Yeah, no, go ahead. Apologies.
No, I mean, that was pretty much what I wanted to say.
Yeah, he wrapped it up beautifully for us. Listen, time is starting to run on.
Yeah.
John, you specifically, we do talk in the car. I'm messing to all the people out there.
Yeah,
we're actually very close friends. You have.
I guess so. You coming in from the same place? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
What are you implying there, Mike? Aaron's
he's such
man.
A snorer.
Those hotels are pretty great in Dublin, aren't they?
you pick us out. You picked us out our same game multi for this game.
Same game multi. Okay, so I was looking through the fixtures for this coming weekend, and one of the ones that stuck out to me is the Giants and the Cardinals game. Now, Cardinals are coming
Said
into
no
this.
One.
Well, literally,
no one.
That's not true because I'm talking about it. Said one person. Cardinals are coming into this on the back of two wins, but who did they beat, Kieran? They beat the Bengals and they beat a. Kind of a messy Falcons team last weekend. But I think this is the type of match, just looking through some of the facts and figures, this is the type of game that can actually suit the Giants' rookie quarterback, Daniel Jones, who hasn't looked incredibly impressive since his very good start. But he's 2-0 in his career so far against teams whose pass defenses are ranked outside the top 10, and the Cardinals are ranked 30th in the league. And the last time he played a team like that, he threw for 350 yards, I think it was. So I think Jones could have a game this weekend. And then again, if you add Saquon Barkley coming back, as seems to be the case, but I would advise people to look a little bit closer to the time if he actually does play this weekend. But if you got a fit Barkley back and Daniel Jones with a good pass or a good game script ahead of him, I think that could be a big win.
Okay, well, let's get our kind of best bets. As usual, I'll go first because it's me.
Yep.
And also, mine won last week, so I get the pleasure. It's like golf. You know, if you win the hole, you get to tee off. I'm going to stick with a winning formula. San Francisco 49ers have been my guys for a few weeks now. I'm starting to think that they might even have a good chance at the Super Bowl. They are heading to Redskins. It's a 10-point handicap. It's big, but you know what? They're going to cover. So I'm going with minus 10. On San Francisco 49ers.
I think that's a good bet.
John Baff, are you going to stick with that game that you mentioned?
Yeah, I'll stick with that one. I'll say a Listen, I really want to see if Barkley's going to play. So if Barkley plays, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a couple of touchdowns. And
sure.
I'm going to go with... well, what are the what's the spread on that game?
If you could not click into the mic like that again ever as well, you realize that people are...
The Cardinals are getting 3.
The Cardinals are getting 3, yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll exceed that.
Yeah, yeah. Let that click into the mic like you're calling a dog.
That's my thinking noise here.
It's a very odd noise. Mike?
Yeah, I was looking at the Niners as well. I think 10 is probably something that they can cover. But I'll go further along and think that the Patriots can cover 10 as well.
You know what? I had to choose between the Patriots and San Francisco. I didn't know, but I'm glad you're doing
San Francisco. But here's the thing. Last week in my Patreon column, where I just pick all the games straight up and write some analysis, there were two games that I picked wrong, but both times I said I can sense an upset happening here. One was Pittsburgh beating the Chargers, because I remembered when Ben was a rookie and they didn't let him throw more than 20 times a game. You know, they won the game running and with defense, which is exactly what they did with Vaughn. He threw 20 passes, and that was it. And the other one was the Jets against Dallas. I just said I smell an upset coming, but I don't have the courage to pick it. So I picked Dallas. But the Jets are not that bad. And with Darnold back, as John said, and Robbie Anderson all of a sudden becomes a factor again, because they can use him deep, and that worked. But the Patriots' strength this season has been the defensive backfield. And I think that they're good enough to hold the Jets in check. This could be like a Buffalo game where it's relatively low scoring. If the Patriots offense can't really click and protect Brady, but I still think they can hit the 10. And I know it on Betfair right now. That's even money. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, those are both. Gentlemen, that was great. Thank you so much. Hopefully we've informed everyone and they've all enjoyed the show, and we've given them a few selections.
Hit a few bases there, I think.
Hit a few selections to consider. So thank you for listening. A reminder that lots more to come. Of course, you've got Football Only Better coming during the week. Racing Only Better. It's a big week of football, of course. Man United, Liverpool taking place. So Football Only Better will be a cracking one to listen to, and it's dropping very shortly. And Cricket Only Better also launches this week. So if you're a fan of cricket, do give it a like. And not only that, not to pile them on, but we also have our Rugby Only Better, which is our look ahead to the knockout stages, hosted by the very fine me, along with lots of other panelists.
What don't you host here, Kieran?
They just lock me in the studio.
Yeah. The host with the most. Yeah. You know, you just reminded me when you mentioned the rugby. Miami's at Buffalo this week. And I think that they were petitioning the league to move the game to Miami because there's a hurricane coming, and they would be declared a nil-nil draw, and they would share the points.
There's a few Scottish people with post-traumatic stress disorder here today.
Yeah, we do have a Scottish, Alan Little of the Thistle Scottish podcast on Rugby Only Better. You can listen to it. We recorded it on Monday morning. He was in fine form.
I'm sure he was.
He was in great form. So look,
what a great match that was, though. I mean, the Japan play, I watched it in the press box at White Hart Lane before the football, you know, and Japan plays rugby the way teams used to play rugby when I first came to Britain, you know, not least the Scottish team, you know, with Jeffries and all those guys. And it was a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, no, it was. It was a cracking contest.
We got to get you on Rugby Only Better, the podcast, Mike.
Yeah, we do. I was actually, not to keep going about it, we will end the show, but yeah. I was at an event last night with Michael Liner, Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood, and a couple other players talking about the Ireland All Blacks game, and it was very, very interesting. And
wow,
I now hope springs eternal for me from Brian O'Driscoll saying he feels that there's something in the air. So
well, that's why we've beaten them twice in a century. So.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening. Do gamble responsibly, of course, and join us next week on NFL Only Better. Once again, thank you to John Baff, who's right beside me.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kieran.
Mike Harrison, for always taking the time to talk to us from his palatial mansion.
It's a pleasure. And you know those New Zealanders begrudge you those two wins.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're coming for us. That's the DVD they're watching the night before. We'll talk to you all again next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.